We are pleased that you've come tonight and glad to have the place to do this and the opportunity that the Lord has given us for it. We surely hope your time is well spent with us this evening as we think about godly and spiritual things. I believe there's probably a plague, maybe more widespread than anything that medical science has ever identified as a medical plague. I'm not talking about the flu or cancer or the common cold or the bubonic plague or any of those sorts of things. But there is a plague that is just as deadly and may very well be the most dreaded disease known to man. And I think it's pervading our society. I think it's a part of something that we deal with very, very frequently. Tonight I'm going to be talking to you about that. I'm going to be talking about the plague of discouragement and how the plague of discouragement undermines the effectiveness that we have in the Lord's work and the effectiveness that we have to grow spiritually ourselves. I think there are about three different things that cause this to be such a tremendous problem for us. And one of those things is that no matter where you go, you're going to find all of the elements for discouragement. It is a universal issue. It is a dreaded problem everywhere. It's a problem that strikes everyone. There's nobody immune to the idea of discouragement. Everybody that you've ever known, just look around the room here tonight, every person that's here has been discouraged at some point in his or her existence. You can rack your brain as you may, but you'll never be able to find a single individual who has never, ever been discouraged. Even people that are ordinarily very upbeat, very positive, very affirmative in their personality, you will find that in their honest moments they will be able to identify periods in which they were down, periods where they were discouraged, periods where they felt like giving up. Whether you're young or old, whether you're rich or poor, whether you're educated or uneducated, no matter the color of your skin, no matter what advantages or disadvantages you may have in life, no matter whether you're a Christian or a non-Christian, every human being deals with discouragement. One of the second things that makes this so threatening is that it is a recurring problem. Just because you have a discouraging episode at one point in your life does not mean then that you have built up an immunity to this disease and you'll never be afflicted by that again. It's not like having the mumps, for instance, or the measles, or childhood disease that once you've had it, you never have to worry about it ever rearing its ugly head in your life ever again. You can be discouraged over and over and over again. In fact, it's possible to live in a state of discouragement. It's possible for someone to not be able to say, oh, I've been really encouraged at various points and seasons in life, but to have a life that's pretty well typified by this kind of discouragement. There's not any antibody which can be injected that gives you the immunity to it. It comes, it goes, sometimes it stays for a long time, sometimes it doesn't last very long, but discouragement obviously is a recurring problem. One of the other things that concerns me most about this is that it's highly contagious. Once discouragement affects you, the people who breathe your air are also people that are subject to being discouraged as well. Discouragement can spread by casual contact. People can become discouraged because you're down, because you're discouraged. You can become discouraged because you're around somebody who is discouraged, and they're despondent even, maybe depressed. Maybe you're familiar with this story of this fellow that was out driving in his car one day and he sees up on the bridge that he's about to cross a man standing on the side of that bridge, and it's obvious that he's contemplating jumping into the river below. So he stops his car and he gets out and he goes up and he thinks, well, if I talk to this man long enough, I can talk some sense into him. And he asks the man, why are you going to jump? And the guy begins to tell him all the things that are going on in his life, all the troubles that he's had. And in his total discouragement, he has concluded that there are just too many things wrong in this world to go on living. And of course, this gentleman that stopped to try to help, he listened and he offered everything that he knew to say, trying to tell the fellow that things surely aren't as bleak as they look. And for 10 or 15 minutes, they have this conversation. And finally, the guy just climbs up on the bridge and jumps off with him because he's been around him long enough that he just sees the world the same way the other guy has seen it. It's just all bad. There's just never going to be anything better about it. Why am I waiting around for all these terrible things to happen? There's no question but that discouragement is something that spreads. Discouragement is very contagious. And because it can be such an insidious problem, even among Christians, we need to know what the Bible has to say about discouragement. We need to know about servants of God in times previous to ours who dealt successfully with discouragement. You might take your Bible and open to the book of Nehemiah, and we're going to be looking in this Old Testament passage of Scripture tonight for a number of the cures that are outlined in this great Bible book about discouragement. You might recall that Nehemiah was the leader of the Jews who had returned to Israel from Babylon to rebuild the wall of Jerusalem and to put things back in order so that life could begin again in this once captive city. God had given Nehemiah a vision of how to go about rebuilding what the Babylonians had destroyed 70 or more years earlier. Now, you can imagine that these people are very excited initially about the idea of going back and beginning again and starting over and rebuilding what glory they once had had. They begin the work with great anticipation for the future. They begin the work full of joy that the time has come for them to get out of captivity and to go rebuild their lives in the land that had been theirs for so long. In the fourth chapter of Nehemiah, in verse 6, it says that the people were possessed at that juncture with a mind to work. In other words, they were all sold on this idea. They were all trying to figure out how they could get this done. They all saw themselves as a part of the solution. And so they worked very, very diligently. And he goes on to say there about their work that they built the wall, and they built the wall joined together to about half of the height that that wall would be if it were completed. So the work was going quite well. They had had a good beginning. The people were excited. The wall was slowly going up. And then something happens. The people encountered some difficult times with that wall about half built. And when the going got tough, the people became discouraged with the effort that they were trying to make. You see, where God is at work, the enemy is also at work. Just always remember that. I sometimes see churches doing quite well and everybody's excited, and I hate to be the one to rain on their parade, but they need to recognize that if things are going well and everything seems to be going upward, don't think that the devil doesn't know that too. And don't think that he's going to leave a church like that alone. The devil is always going to try to thwart the purposes of God. And if he sees things going well, he's going to try somewhere to interject himself into the middle of all of that good. Where God is at work, you may rest assured that Satan will stir up agitators. He will try to attempt to block the work of God. Look at verses 7 and 8 of this same text. It came about when Sanballat, Tobiah, the Arabs, the Ammonites, and the Ashdodites heard that the repair of the walls of Jerusalem went on, that the breaches began to be closed, that they were very angry, and all of them conspired together to come and fight against Jerusalem and to cause a disturbance in it. When the enemies of God's work began to come against the people of God, the result was that the people got discouraged. In fact, they were greatly discouraged. And the same kind of thing happens to us today. Often when the enemy comes against us, we get despondent. We become bewildered. And it's important to realize that. I mean, you need to know that before you go into the work, that the enemy is going to attack, and that you are going to have periods where He's going to try to get you to quit doing what you are doing. And we've got to learn how to deal with that discouragement in an effective and positive way, because discouragement is going to come. And the challenge here is to know the signs of its coming, to know the actions that we have to take in order to overcome it. And so to do that, we have to understand both the causes of discouragement as well as the cures for it. Let me start by talking to you about some of these things that are causes of discouragement. Fatigue is one of those things that can bring about the kind of despondency and discouragement we're discussing tonight. In verse 10 of this chapter, we read that in Judah it was said, "The strength of the burden bearers is failing." When the enemies of the rebuilding of the wall had begun to cause a disturbance among the people, we began to see fatigue setting in. So their strength failed them. They were getting tired. They'd been working hard. And when you are physically tired, when you are fatigued, it is much easier to slip into depression and discouragement. The people who had been working on the wall had been working a long time. We would say in our vernacular, they were just worn out. And now, in their worn out state, the opposition comes. That caused their physical fatigue to become even more acute. You need to remember that when you're physically drained, when you're really tired, when you've really been working hard, when you just don't have much energy left, you need to recognize that it's easy at that point to become discouraged. Even the slightest problem can make you discouraged. And it's also interesting to note just when these people became fatigued and discouraged. Verse 6 says that the wall was built to half its height. They were halfway through. They had almost come to the point where they were on the downhill slide of getting this project completed. You know, a lot of times when we start a new project, the first half goes very quickly. The first half goes very well. Well, why? Well, because we started that project, we were excited about accomplishing that goal. It's a new goal. It's a novel goal. But when the new wears off and the work gets to be routine, when it gets to be boring, when we are tired, well, it's easy then to want to quit. It's easy then to want to walk away. It's easy then to become fatigued. And when you're tired, it's easy to become discouraged and to begin to think, I'll never get this finished. I'll never complete this task. And if I'll never complete this task, if I'll never get this finished, what's the use in keeping on? What's the use in continuing to do what I do? That's what happened in Judah. Verse 10 says that the strength of the burden bearers is failing. And they said, we ourselves are unable to rebuild the wall. They were ready to give up. Now these are the same people that in verse 6 it was said of them that the people had a mind to work. They were all excited in verse 6. But by verse 10, their strength was failing them. Can you think of some project you've undertaken where you've had an experience like this? I don't want to bring up any bad memories, but is it not true that all of our homes probably have some circumstance pending right now because we just got discouraged and decided we'd quit? We just couldn't finish the task. We just couldn't finish the job. It got to be more than we anticipated it was going to be when we entered the work. About halfway through the project, you began to think that you'd never finish it. It's taking longer than you thought. It's costing more than you wanted to pay. Those are not unusual kinds of things. And so we began to rationalize and even develop arguments for why we ought to just quit, why we ought to not finish it, why we ought to leave it alone. There are a lot of folks who fail to complete their tasks because of that kind of fatigue, because of that discouragement. And it's very true when things go wrong, when it's not just been smooth sailing, when you knock the paint over, when you break the glass, when you blow up that microwave you're trying to install because you wired it up wrong. It's discouraging. And when you're tired physically, it just makes it worse than that. Well, let me suggest to you that frustration is another reason why people become discouraged. Verse 10, we read there that the people were saying, there's so much rubbish and we ourselves are unable to build the wall. They became discouraged because They were frustrated with what they were having to deal with. They were talking about rubbish here. That's the word that's used in verse 10. Rubbish that's in their way. Now, what could that have been? Well, remember, they're rebuilding a wall that was destroyed by the Babylonian army. And let me tell you that though I was not there and I don't have any photographs of what happened after the Babylonians left, I'm sure that they did not leave everything in perfect order. I'm sure that they didn't adopt the policies that our country has adopted when we've gone to war with people where we destroy their country and then we go back and rebuild it for them. I don't think that's exactly what the Babylonians did. They did not move all that rubble and all that debris and pile it over here somewhere in a heap somewhere so that the foundation would be available for these people to rebuild upon it. No, when they started building this wall, there were old broken rocks, there were piles of dirt, there was dried out mortar, there were all sorts of other debris that were underfoot, and there was just junk everywhere. It was frustrating and fatiguing just to move the junk. And once you got that done, who could even think about laying brick for a new wall? They were worn out just from having to move the junk around. And just as they lost sight of their goal, we can lose sight of our goal when we have so much junk in our lives with which we have to deal. Do you have a lot of junk in the way in your life? You want me to go to your garage? Come to mine. And you'll see a lot of junk that's in my way. And I can't get to the things I want to get to because there's a lot of junk in front of it. And to get to the thing that I want to get to, I got to move all that to the other side of the garage. And by the time I get that done, I don't even want to open that box that's got the stuff in it that I was going to be looking for when I started out on that trek. Well, that's one physical way of looking at it, but that's not the kind of junk I'm really talking about tonight. The rubbish in your life might be the sins you've committed that you've not tidied up. The things that you've done that were wrong, or maybe wrong thoughts, or maybe attitudes that you didn't correct and you've been willing to let them go. Or the rubbish might be simply the many trivial things that waste your precious time. Consume all of your energy. Spend your money. The junk of life, the rubbish of life, is simply anything that gets in our way that keeps us from accomplishing the truly important goals in our lives. And the most troubling thing about all of this rubbish is that it just frustrates us. We just can't do anything. We can't move. We can't turn around. We can't make any progress. But we need to understand that all this junk is a problem. In Hebrews 12, in verse 1, Paul, if he be the writer of Hebrews 12, is saying to us that we, in order to be Christians, are going to have to learn how to lay aside every encumbrance. Some of the translations say the weight. Lay aside the weight that so easily besets us. Having a lot of rubbish is an encumbrance. Having a lot of trash around is weight. Slows us down, trips us up, causes us to stumble, makes us fall. And it's frustrating. Try to run through a briar patch sometime. How successful can you be at that? I used to go bird hunting with my father when I was a little boy. And I hated bird hunting. Not because I didn't like shooting birds. Not because I didn't like fried quail at supper. But because you don't hunt quail unless you walk through every briar patch there is in the countryside. And I'll tell you, the quail get to be less and less tempting when you've been walking through blackberry briars all day. And when you've been trying to hack your way through something to get to where these birds are or where that dog is that's trying to find them. I'll tell you, there's no easy way to do that. And if you spend all of your attention and energy on the rubbish, you don't have time for the task that you were really trying to get to. Here's the other thing that causes us to be discouraged, and that is fear. The enemies of the Lord's work had struck fear in the hearts of God's people. And Nehemiah could see it. He could see they were terrified of these folks that were mentioned up there that came up against them and began to complain and fuss about what they were doing. Remember they said in verse 10, we ourselves are unable to rebuild this wall. They were ready to quit. They were ready to give up. They were afraid they were going to be killed if they kept trying to build that wall. They were afraid that the enemy would not stop with just a verbal threat, but that the enemy would come against them and take their lives. And so as a result, they were very, very discouraged. Fear is a discouraging thing. When you're afraid, how do you respond? Well, sometimes it just makes you want to give up. That's the same feeling that these Jews had. And because of their fear, they said, maybe we ought to just back off. Maybe we ought to quit. They thought they were not strong enough to finish because they couldn't resist these people that were threatening them. If we feel like the task is too large, if we feel like the resources we have are too meager, sometimes we react the same way when we are fearful. If we do that, we're going to fail. And the Jews could have quit. If they had done so, they would have surely failed. They would not have accomplished what was clearly God's purpose for their lives. So we have to be careful not to let fear overcome us. We've got to be aware that when we're fearful, we're vulnerable to discouragement. That's a tactic of the enemy. It's one of the chief strategies that he employs in defeating us. So we've seen these three causes, these three things that lead to discouragement. And we've been reminded to be on our guard when we see them, because wherever we see these things, discouragement isn't far behind. But what are some of the cures? What are some of the ways to regroup? What are some of the ways to get to the point where we can overcome this temptation to be discouraged? Well, in the case of these folks, Nehemiah 4:13 would point out, they reorganized. They took a step back and evaluated what they needed to be doing and decided to go at this task a little bit differently. Verse 13 says that Nehemiah said, I stationed men in the lowest parts of the space behind the wall, the exposed places, and I stationed the people in families with their swords, their spears, and their bows. Now I want you to remember, they've already got a wall halfway up. They've got something to protect them, though it's not fully protective. They've got half of a wall built. Nehemiah had already organized the people so that they could get the wall half built. Now they needed to reorganize so they could get the wall fully built. Sometimes in the middle of something, we have to change gears, we say. Sometimes in the middle of a task, we have to say, all right, what we have been doing got us to this point, but we've got to figure out now how to get from this point to where we need to be. Sometimes you can't end up where you started out. You have to alter your plan somewhere along the way. Now, if they had not had these enemies come up and threaten them, then what they started out doing would probably have worked all the way to the end. But when they started out doing what they were doing, they didn't know they were going to have all these enemies showing up threatening them. So now that these enemies have posed a threat, they've got to figure out how do we deal with the threat that these enemies are making as well as continue building this wall and get it completed. So what Nehemiah did is to reorganize the people to be effective in that task. We have to do that too. When we're discouraged, one of the things we can do is just reorganize our priorities. You know, you have to stop and say, well, I don't think I can get that done, but I think I can get this done. And if I change the way I'm doing that, I can do this. Maybe you have to alter your goals. Maybe the thing you set out with at first is not the thing that you're going to be able to do. You can look at your life. You can adopt a change in approach instead of becoming so discouraged that you just throw in the towel and quit. If you have a problem, reorganize. You got a problem in your marriage? Well, don't quit. A lot of people do. I just don't understand, but a lot of people think that marriage is supposed to be just one big happy ride. No problems ever. Isn't that the way the movies say it's supposed to be? Isn't that what the princess always does? She finds Prince Charming and they live happily ever after. Nobody's supposed to have a problem. But when people run into problems, first thing they want to do is get a divorce. Well, that's not going to help anything. It's going to hurt a whole lot of things. It's going to reintroduce into this already problematic situation new problems that you never even dreamed would come about. So what do? Well, you don't quit. You change your approach. You adopt a new attitude. Do you have a problem in your business? Well, don't give up. Change your priorities. You have a problem in your walk with the Lord? Well, don't stop following Jesus. Are people down at church mistreating you? It's amazing to me how many people get mad at their brother and they take it out on the Father. You know, they quit him because they've got some brother in the Lord that didn't treat them the way they should have treated them. Don't stop following Jesus. Change the way you pray. Surrender some area in your life you've been holding back. Maybe you're frustrated by all of the rubbish in your life. Reorganize it. Get rid of some of it. The point is, don't quit. Don't be overcome by discouragement. Do something about it. Here's the second thing I'm going to suggest that we must remember. And that is what verse 14 indicates. We need to remember some things. Listen to what Nehemiah said there. He said, "When I saw their fear, I rose and I spoke to the nobles and the officials and the rest of the people. And I said, 'Don't be afraid of them. Remember the Lord, who is great and awesome.'" No matter if Sanballat and Tobiah and the Ammonites and the Ashdodites and the Arabs are breathing out all of these awful threats against us, they're not stronger together than our one great God is. Remember who we're building this wall for. Remember that we're serving God who is great and awesome. How do you remember the Lord? Do we think about the Lord when we face discouragement? What do you remember about the Lord? Well, you've got to first of all remember that He's there. He's aware of the things that are troublesome to you. He's aware of the challenges that you're facing. You see, you can be very discouraged if you think you're all alone in your situation. But God is there. He's there whether you realize it. He's there whether you don't realize it. But it helps to realize it. It helps to be aware of the fact that you are not by yourself. And then you need to remember, as Nehemiah reminded these people, that our God is great and awesome. He's capable. He's sufficient to deal with our discouragement and with the situations we face. This is something of which we need to be reminded very frequently. That's what it means to remember the Lord. Remember who it is you serve. So when you're discouraged, you've got to turn your attention from your discouragement to the one who's able to do something about that situation. Has God been faithful to you in the past? Then He'll be faithful to you in the future. Has God stood beside you through the terrible things that you would have never dreamed you would have been able to do in the past? Then whatever you're facing in the future, God will still be there and will still be faithful to you today and tomorrow. Remember the Lord. Remember His promises. Remember His goodness. Remember His power. Our God is an awesome God. That's the only sense in which I use the word awesome. In reference to God, Nehemiah said, "The Lord is great and the Lord is awesome." There is no one else of whom that really can be said. But finally, if you're going to win this battle against discouragement, you're going to have to resist and be active in fighting off discouragement. Notice what Nehemiah said to them in verse 14. He had these people with their swords and their bows and their weapons back behind the workers. And he said, "You need to fight for your brothers, your sons, your daughters, your wives, and your houses." Nehemiah is telling them, "Don't you give in to these threats. Don't give up when the going gets tough here. You fight." He was saying that they shouldn't just give in to their discouragement, but that they should resist it. Put up a fight. Some of us don't do very well in putting up a fight against discouragement. We get down and we just quit. We roll over and play dead. We never act like we're going to try to beat it. But they have to resist it, and they have to resist it with everything they've got. He's calling them to action. And that's the same call that we must heed if we're going to win the war against discouragement. It's clear to me in the Scriptures that as believers, we are engaged in a spiritual battle. I don't know if you think about this very much, but we are all involved, even though We're human beings. We are involved in a supernatural conflict. I don't know if you've given that much thought, but there is a huge war that goes on behind the scenes of this life every day between the forces of good and the forces of evil. God and Satan are at constant odds. Our enemy is the devil, if we're on the Lord's side. Satan and his demonic spirits are committed to do everything possible to defeat humanity. They're looking to do everything they can to discourage trust in God, obedience to God, faithfulness to God. And we have to do exactly and precisely what Nehemiah encouraged the people of his day to do. Resist. Isn't that what we're told in James 4 and verse 7, where he says to resist the devil? Resist him. In fact, he goes on to say that if you resist the devil, he will flee from you. We're to resist the work that he does in our congregational midst. We're to resist the thoughts that he introduces into our thinking of a negative nature. We're to resist all of the discouragement that he wants to introduce into our lives. We have to fight the fight of faith. Stand firmly against the work of the enemy in our midst. I'll tell you that we don't do this often enough. That when we find ourselves down, when we find ourselves discouraged, we need to look at the devil and say, "Get thee behind me, Satan." I had a friend in college years ago who put together his own little rendition of that. He says, "Get thee behind me, Satan, and don't push while you're back there." And I thought that to be pretty clever, that sometimes we can put Satan at our rear, but he can get behind us and push us right into something that we don't want to do. We need to say that. We need to know who the enemy is. We need to fight against him. We need to resist him. We don't need to be naive about where this discouragement comes from. The devil wants us to fail. If I fail, that's a tragedy for me personally. But it'd be a tragedy for my family if I fail spiritually, wouldn't it? Would there be brethren that would be affected by my spiritual failure? Would I cause any ripple at all in the life of this church if I fail spiritually? And in the kingdom of God at large, if the devil causes me to throw in the towel and to give up and to quit and to not be the faithful person God is wanting me to be, would that make a difference at all? We need to recognize who it is that we're fighting, and only in that way will we find success in the battle that we're waging against discouragement. Yes, fatigue, frustration, fear, those things bring discouragement, but reorganizing our priorities and remembering the Lord and resisting the devil will bring us through a number of discouraging things that we face. And if we apply those principles, I believe God will be able to bring us the victory that we're looking for. In Nehemiah, the 6th chapter in verse 3, when Nehemiah was asked by his enemies to meet with them down on the plains of Ono, he knew they meant to do him harm. And he wasn't about to get into a situation like that. They had tried every means of discouraging him from continuing to build that city back. They didn't want that city to be rebuilt. But his response to them ought to be our motto as well. He said to the enemies of God's cause, he said, "I'm doing a great work. I cannot come down to meet with you. Why should the work cease while I leave it and go down to you?" He said, "I'm not going to be dissuaded from what God has called upon me to do here, and I should not allow anything to deter me or discourage me from doing the work that God set before me." Do I get discouraged? Absolutely, I do. Somebody asked me one time, they said, "Have you ever thought about quitting preaching?" I said, "After every Sunday night, I think about it. After every Lord's Day, I think, well, maybe I ought to be landscaping. Maybe I ought to be farming. Maybe I ought to be the college professor I thought I might be when I started out." But I come to realize after a while that when you hear all of that kind of stuff over and over again, that just means that the devil's working on you. And he's trying to get you to fail. He wants you to quit. He wants you to give up whatever it is you're trying to do in the service of God. Because if he can get you to fail and cause you to be lost, that's one less victory that God has won. Don't get down. Don't get discouraged. When you find yourself headed that way, figure out what's causing it. Recognize who's behind it and stop it before it overwhelms you. That's something all of us have to do. No, life isn't always positive, and there's not encouragement at every turn, and there's not always going to be an attaboy when you've done the thing that you ought to do, and everybody notices that, and everybody comes to your aid, and everybody encourages you. But you do what's right. You trust in the Lord. You remember Him. You remember that He didn't quit when the going got tough, and that's the reason you can be saved, is because He endured, and He was steadfast to the end. Even though the devil threw everything he could throw at Him and tried to get Him to do that, which would have caused Him to have to abrogate His position as God's Son, the One who was the sinless Savior, He didn't let that happen. He persisted, and He obeyed, doing what God wanted Him to do. If you're not a Christian tonight, you can be one. And the devil will, of course, immediately become your greatest enemy. But the Lord will be on your side. And the book of John says, greater is He that is in you than he that is in the world. Don't ever forget that being on the Lord's side is far more productive than anything the devil can offer us. If you're here this evening, allow your faith to become the victory that overcomes the world by obeying God, being a child of His, having your sins washed in the blood of His Son. Let us help you obey the gospel while together we stand and while we sing.